Hey, there we go.
In terms of the JSM concept maps, I think we decided that we would kind of use Tara's map as a rough outline for a lit review paper, which is how she wrote her map to some extent, and starting to think about how you would organize things in the lit review paper. And then my map kind of fit within that scheme. My map was more of a big picture overview, but a lot of the pieces that I talked about were represented in, I can't say that word today. They were there in various parts of Tara's map. So those, that's kind of what we saw about those maps. But then we were realizing that in the literature we reviewed, we had a bunch of different things that were scattered through kind of across various places. We had the articles we were first reading when we were still trying to figure out what we were doing. Now we're starting to collect more references that are more focused in terms of belief bias, confirmation bias, and that. So that's what led us to deciding that we needed to revisit the bibliography, pull everything all into one place, and start to annotate it really well so that we would have all those notes prepared for writing the paper.
Okay. Hi, guys. It's Holly Lynn. I'm here. Sorry I'm late.
That's okay. Hi, Holly Lynn.
Hello.
We're just getting started, and I think this is a good time to segue over then to the annotated bibliography, which Tara had put together for us.
How do I get the list of documents? Wait a minute.
I just went to the top of the Google Groups page, and there's a documents little link thing I clicked on.
Ah. Okay, thank you.
I figured I'd try that before I searched for an email.
Okay. Yeah, I like the way she set this up. So basically, we have the citation, the summary. And then I was, okay, so what is the little, does anybody know what the little flaggy thing means? Does that just mean it's something that nobody's read yet, or?
Where are you guys?
I'm looking. I'm wondering if Rab has access to this. Rab doesn't yet. Hopefully it'll let me add. So what we did, Holly Lynn, and what we're looking at is, we decided after doing our concept maps for JSM, we realized that our literature was kind of scattered everywhere. So we started to pull together one coherent annotated bibliography, and Tara created a new Google Groups page for that, but it looks like she only gave permission to the four of us.
Okay.
So I'm trying to find an email to see if I can.
Yeah, Tara may have to actually give them access. She created it. I don't know if we're.
Yeah, we'll see.
Usually, the way groups work is that once you're a member, you can invite other people.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay, though, you don't have to wait on me to continue.
Sorry, I'm actually trying to give you access right now.
Are Randy or Felicity here?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, hey, Randy.
All right, so I think I just gave all of the RAB members access. I'm not able to multitask today, though, so I couldn't type and talk at the same time. So you guys should, in theory, either be able to check your email, hopefully you'll get a link, or you should be able to go to your Google Docs page, and you'll see something called Annotated Bibliography, August 2010.
Yeah, it does say, it now says private to Tara plus six more, so I think you did that successfully, Herla.
Okay. And so this, like, the purpose of this document is just to help us regroup, reevaluate, figure out what we've already read, what we still need to read, what gaps in the literature we need to fill in before we could do a lit review type paper on this topic.
And hopefully consolidate a little bit.
Yes. And I'm noticing that flag is gone, it looks like. Were you talking about the flag, the orange flag under the word summary in the first one?
Yeah, it was like on the Sloman article, and then it was on the... No,
I think that
the,
might be someone else's cursor.
Bookmark.
I wonder if someone else has clicked on the page and it thinks they're going to edit. Because I noticed mine said Jackie Rotten, like when you hovered over the little thing.
It was written down there, like a blue flag by a couple different things that I don't think are the cursors, and it looks like they're ones that we haven't read.
Yeah, I got one by Sloman, and I've got one by Wild, and...
Mm-hmm.
I can never say that name.
I think it's Van Cook.
Van Cook? Oh, okay.
Time I heard it.
Okay. Not even close.
Well, on that note, I have to tease you, Lee. I heard that you mispronounced my name.
Broughton? Oh! No!
Okay. It's not like we hear each other's names that often, so.
Yeah, especially last names.
All right, Jackie, so how do you say it?
It's Roten.
Roten.
I always joke that it's like written Roten, if that helps.
Oh, now I feel like a...
Don't worry, it's not like I'm well-known.
Yeah, just wait until you mispronounce some well-known person and they're in the audience.
Oh, that's going to be...
That's embarrassing.
Okay, I'll make a note in my brain somewhere. Anyway, okay.
Now what we need to do is figure out what to do with this bibliography. I guess we need to start going through systematically and dividing up references so that we can read them and fill in the pieces to this. And then once we know that, we'll kind of get an idea of what's here and then think about what additional lit searches we need to do. Does anyone know a good way to approach that?
Okay, well, a couple questions. I'm going to be honest. I did not get a chance to add to this, so I was very bad. Did anybody else get a chance to add to this besides Tara?
No.
Okay.
I noticed, like, one of the things that I'd updated every once in a while was the annotated bibliography on the confirmation bias, and I noticed Tara did pull that in here.
Yeah, and that was the other question I had. At some point, if we go back to the Google Groups page, there was, like, three different pages that had reference lists on them, some of which I think are not going to be useful to us anymore, but some of which we may want to, not just the one that you did, Herla, there was like two other pages that had lists of references on them, and I'm trying to combine and consolidate, and the things are a little more organized. So we might want to take a look at those and see if we want to import those in, and then we can maybe get rid of a couple pages on Google Groups and get some more organized about all this. And I guess the third question is, if there is a description on this, do we assume that Tara's looked through it or not? Because some of these have a fairly deep, she's got the abstract in here, she's got a summary. I mean, it's kind of hard to tell what she's looked at and what she's not.
Well, I think the ones with the summaries, she, or at least one of us, has looked at and posted on one of these other Google pages. The ones with the abstracts, I think those are mostly confirmation bias ones. I see a couple here that aren't, but a lot of the ones with the abstracts, and ones definitely where the font changes. And she even says, these are dumped from our Google Groups page. I didn't have a chance to do anything with them. They haven't been read unless they're separate notes that are indicated. So
yeah.
Even though it has an abstract, that doesn't indicate that someone's read it. It's just I literally copied and pasted when I was creating the Google Groups page. I copied and pasted the, like, Eric records or wherever I was searching.
Okay.
And then if I had read something, if you scroll through, you'll see some parts are in bold, and those are my notes. So those indicate the ones that I've read.
Okay.
So abstract doesn't necessarily mean that it was read, but I bet the summaries do.
Okay. So there are still, I mean, at the top, the Sloman article doesn't have a summary. There was another one. I think the two that we had gotten from Jennifer had suggested from JSM, those haven't been read. They're in here, but they don't have summaries on them. So, yeah, the Sloman, what did you say? Wild and what?
Fancook.
Fancook?
Yeah.
Okay. I cannot pronounce names to save my life. Actually, maybe that's what the little flags are.
Names we don't know how to pronounce.
Yeah.
Or additional citations we need to read.
She doesn't know how to pronounce. No. Those are the ones that haven't been that she didn't read. Because I think those are the only two without summaries.
Maybe. So she flagged them to keep them so they wouldn't get lost.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. That cracked me up. Okay. So, yeah, those are the two, I think, that have definitely not been read.
Does anybody have... Does anybody have a big or a good idea about how to organize these easily? I know part of me wants to, at this point, go ahead, before we go too far with our bibliography, start to import it into some sort of actual software. So I think I had forwarded the email to the group that Holly Lynn had sent to me about possible choices, and she had recommended Zotero. And there's a couple reasons. I think this would make it much easier just to organize, to sort, to search through these records, because we're starting to get a lot, and I personally am just overwhelmed by a long list unless there's some way to sort and organize it. And then the other thing is I'm hoping that these software will actually then help you format references when you're writing a paper. Do you know, Holly Lynn, can Zotero do that? Can it help you format references when you're writing a paper?
Yes, it can. I have never used that feature of it. But I know that it can do it, and it's done it for my students.
That, I think, would be awesome as someone who just spent an obscene amount of time formatting references for another paper I was submitting. I would like to have that sort of functionality.
I'm going to ask if this has anything.
How does it do it perfectly? You still kind of have to know the rules of the citation, you know, language that you're using to check it.
Yes, but just something to give us a head start would be appreciated. Even something that has the feature, like I know in tech, it only includes the references in the bibliography that you cited in the paper.
Right.
So that you don't have to, as you're changing the text, you don't have to cross-check the bibliography with the references in the paper. You know those are at least going to match. You still have to format. You still have to make sure the formatting itself is correct in terms of the style that the journal is looking for, but you at least know that everything is cited. Everything in the reference list was cited in the paper, and everything that was cited in the paper is included in the reference list. So if it could do something like that, that would be cool. So I don't know. I think we should start moving. What do you guys think? I know it's one more thing to learn, But I think a little bit of startup time now might serve us all well later, maybe even beyond this project.
No. That is the next step is to put this in, because, yeah, I mean, the whole point of a lit review is you sort of put things in topics and look at all the different aspects of it and a big giant list. Well, it's good to have a big giant list. It's not a sortable list. That's not really helpful. You make a very good point, at least. I think so. I don't know, I just don't know how to write a lit review with three other people. I'm like trying to figure out how to do that. But everybody, each person's only read pieces of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking it might be good to, and I don't know, I wasn't in on the last conference call, so you may have done this already, but try to identify just, you know, exactly what the main goal of the literature review is, because it looks like, kind of looking through the references, there are, you know, like several literature reviews on confirmation bias already, so that's probably not the main goal, is just to do another lit review on confirmation bias. You know, maybe, for example, one thing might be examining the first reference on here is to the gaze document. So, you know, one possibility would be to do something like to examine the gaze recommendation to teach with authentic data in light of the literature on confirmation bias, and then kind of maybe even make it a critique or, you know, but I think having like a main goal would help, especially if you're working with a large group of people, to kind of pick out what the important pieces of the articles are, you know, that would contribute toward that goal, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think Randy's right. I mean, I think you've got to think about, I think your goal is twofold. I mean, on one sense, you're trying to get a handle on the literature to inform the research that you're doing. But you're also trying to think about this lit review being a document that might eventually be able to be published and stand alone. And so, you know, those might look slightly different, but it just seems to me that, especially now that you have the direction that you're going for the research that you're interested in, that it has become, you know, the focus has become a lot narrower, and what you're searching for in any of the articles, as Randy said, is something particular. So thinking about what the big story is that you want to try to tell through the lit review, and then, you know, what subsections might there be, you know, for that. So as far as writing with a large group, I think once you decide kind of and this is where I think the conceptual maps can continue to help, that as you're narrowing your focus, that you keep redrawing a concept map or an outline or whatever you want to do until you get to a point where you think it's telling the story that you want to tell, and then you assign parts to different people. But I think that you're still at the stage where with some of the articles that you're reading, you need to know exactly what information you might be pulling out of that article, because everything that person has to say in the article is not of interest to you.
Yeah.
So should we set an assignment for the next call to think about this goal of the lit review? What it is we want to do, what questions we might still have to be answered, or what pieces we might still need to collect to accomplish our goals, and then get together in our next call and compare those notes and try and synthesize that into one coherent picture, or, you know, pick the best depending on how well they mesh. Do you think that sounds reasonable? So I imagine, to kind of rephrase that and make it a little more concrete, each person brainstorms what they imagine the goal of the lit review to be and then thinks about what we still need to look at in order to accomplish that goal.
Okay.
Or maybe not what we still need to look at, but maybe just what we would need in general. And then once we figure that, we can figure out what we have and what we still need. How does that sound? So what we would need to look at to accomplish that goal.
Okay. Do we think Randy said that there was a couple other confirmation bias split reviews. Do we think it would help to maybe look at one of those just to kind of, just as an idea of what, I might just look at one for my own personal edification.
Yeah.
Just because for me, it always helps to kind of look at an example of what somebody else has done and kind of see how they've put it together.
Yeah, I think that would be fine. Whatever you want to look at to help inform your idea of the goal or how you imagine our lit review to look at or how you imagine our lit review to go, I think that would be fine.
Mm-hmm. And just as far as, I mean, going forward, I mean, the lit review is certainly, a major item that's on your plate right now. But I think that also part of your brainstorming is coming up with a concise list of the tasks that need to get done, both kind of short-term and long-term, and how you all might be able to kind of divide and conquer to get some things done.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea.
All right. Let me
do. And I think that actually feeds well. One of the other agenda items for this meeting was thinking about where we're going in terms of the research study, particularly with respect to what we need to get IRB permission for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe what we can spend the next, we're already about 30 minutes into our call, and I know we have to get off at 3:15 latest today. So maybe what we can spend the next few minutes working on is thinking about what we need to do for the IRB. Because I'm assuming we will need an IRB, so thinking about what the study is going to look like and then what are those pieces that need to go into that application. Does that seem reasonable? Did anyone, before we switch gears, does anyone have anything else they want to add or say about the lit review?
I'm good.
I think I'm good.
So in terms of where we go from here, where do we stand in terms of the questions? Is our first step to pilot our instrument? I'm guessing since we haven't piloted it yet. Or is our first step still to refine the instrument? Do we need to go back and look at that instrument one more time?
Well, I did add quickly today the Mac PC. I finished off those questions, so I mean, you at least probably want to look at the last two questions on the page because those weren't done the last time we talked. And now I'm looking at this. Why is there only one medical marijuana question?
So
all right,
maybe I
do that one.
Do you guys have a document that is sooner than June 1st for the pilot questions?
Are you looking on Google Docs or Google Groups?
Google Groups.
Yeah, I think we edited everything in Google Docs, so I'm looking at the Google Docs, the research.
Nobody has shared with us then.
It actually says the six collect. Can you look at the whole list of stuff in Google Docs?
I can. And, Herla, I had sent you another email saying that you had to give me access. So they said I didn't have access to the document that you guys were looking at, the annotated bibliography.
I had you on the list.
Well, and the email came to me, but it came to my NC State email instead of my Gmail, and it wouldn't let me add it just by clicking on
it. I'm sorry. What's your Gmail then, Holly Lynn?
It's Holly Lynn Stir. Holly Lynn with an STER at the end.
Okay.
at gmail.com.
Okay. I will try and take care of that. Yes, now the document in question is called Research Instrument Questions, and it was last edited today. I'm guessing that was Lee adding her study.
Yeah. For some reason, I don't have that. I don't know why.
We need to go through and figure out all of our permissions on these things, too, as part of our cleaning. All right, so task number one, we need to just review those questions, make sure that they all seem okay to us. Task number two for now, well, another task, not necessarily task number two, but another task is to pilot those questions. Now, do we just want to pilot the research questions, or do we want to try and pilot also our system for connecting data from one time to another? So we want to pilot both the opinion survey and the research question survey.
Yeah, I think we want to do both.
Yeah, I would personally be in favor of both, because I think it's going to be – I just want to make sure we got the system down. I mean, be very pragmatic about it. Find out, you know, if we're asking students to remember a path, you know, because we had talked about asking students to have a code or whatever they would remember, and, you know, if that's the way we're going to go, make sure that they're actually remembering their code, and if that's going to be a huge issue, if students are going to forget it, and, you know, that sort of thing. You know, it's the system we come up with, if it actually works. I don't know if that's what we agreed on, but that's what I remember last talking about.
Well, yeah, you're going to have some way to link their responses across surveys.
Right.
So if this is going to be a pilot study, do we want to do it at just one of our colleges or a couple of them? That we're not all having to do the IRB nightmare?
Well, and this is what's going to be, I think that's a good question. Related with the IRB, was it Herla who wasn't able to get IRB here at NC State?
Not in time. My IRB approval, when we were trying to pilot the opinion survey,
uh-huh.
My IRB approval came in the day after classes ended.
Okay. So in that IRB approval, you were just asking about the belief survey.
Yes, that was the only questions I gave to the IRB here. They didn't see the research instrument questions at all.
Okay. Well, one thing that you can do, instead of submitting an entirely new IRB, is you can submit a modification at any of the institutions to say, we'd like to add an additional instrument onto this study.
Ah.
And submit it as a modification of the previous one. It might go through faster.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
So, you know, if you've got the draft of the instrument ready, then what you could probably do is, you know, email your primary contact at your IRB offices and say, you know, we have an existing IRB approval, here's the letter or whatever, and I want to add another instrument onto that, and just send them the instrument and ask them the best way to do it.
Okay.
So sometimes if they still see it as being exempt, in the kind of exempt category, then they'll just file it and, you know, file it as a modification.
That's a good idea. So then terms of IRB, I actually remember when I was doing my thesis experiment at Michigan, they didn't want me to do a separate IRB application for my pilot and then my full study. So do we need to think a little more long-term here in terms of looking ahead to when we want to actually collect data?
I don't remember my IRB being that different for it. So basically, I almost sound like I could almost like, you know, click a box. I just wanted to continue the same thing and just need it longer for it.
Right.
I mean, if we're going to be just doing the same thing but larger, it seems like I'm really just doing the same thing that I could just request that.
Right. And
the only reason why you would need to get a different IRB is if you are, or, you know, or if you're modifying is if you're adding instruments. Or adding some way where, so I think with the modification, the thing that you need to make clear is that they do have to enter a code so that you can link the surveys. So that is a major part of the modification that they just, the IRB office just needs to know that the students are not going to be entering their name or social security number or anything like that, that you need to have put in place what kind of coding system you're going to ask them to do to link the results.
And then I'm thinking the other thing we might need to check, I can't remember mine, but I vaguely think I had to put in a time frame of when I thought this research was going to take place. So I'm thinking we might have to check that and edit it accordingly.
Yes. For future reference, always put like a couple years.
That's a good idea.
Because it always takes longer to do than you thought anyway.
Okay.
So I think those are the, is there anything else we're missing in the IRB? I mean, so far our research protocol was, if I'm remembering this correctly, in the beginning of the semester, we asked them the opinion survey. And then at some point throughout the semester, we had even talked about possibly at several points throughout the semester, we ask the research instrument questions.
Yeah.
What about interviews? I'm thinking if we wanted to pull people in for interviews, would that's probably something that would need to be stated explicitly in the IRB, correct?
Yes.
Along with any potential compensation we might offer for participation in these interviews? So do we know that we want to do that for sure? Do we at least want to ask about it, leave our options open?
Mike,
can we do an addendum to the addendum?
Right. Well, if you're gonna suggest doing more than just adding another instrument, then you're gonna have to submit a new IRB. Because there's gonna be too many other things coming into play. But I think having the option to be able to interview students is a good thing, because whether you end up doing it or not, having the prior permission to do it is good. It gives you the option that if something, you know, interesting is coming up, that you can plan on, you know, doing interviews impromptu if you want to, or you plan on it. I mean,
basically, if we're pretty sure we're going to do interviews, we really need to do a new IRB now, or we make that decision later and do a new IRB later. Is that more or less what you're saying, Holly Lynn?
Yeah.
All right. I don't think anyone wants to do a new IRB now. New IRB now.
But depending on your institution, you may be having to do it anyway. I mean, when you guys send these emails to your contacts about just modifying with an instrument, they may ask you to submit a new one. I mean,
yeah, I'm pretty sure mine's going to.
I mean, in my experience in NC State, I could probably just modify it.
Here's a strange question. If we do want to interview students eventually, then don't we have to somehow be able to identify which students made which comments? See if we can contact that individual student somehow.
Yeah, that's gonna be hard to maintain the anonymity.
That is a good question, though, because that was my impression of what Watson and Moritz did, was they asked, you know, they took text responses and then from a big survey of responses selected, they said, like, representative and then interesting responses and called those people in for an interview. So I would think that to me implies that they were targeting specific individuals.
Right.
So at some point they did have to break anonymity. But I wonder if there's
some sort of like box that you can check, like, are you willing to discuss your responses with us? If so, we need you to enter your email address. That way they pretty much know that we know who they are. I don't know.
Yeah, you can do, I mean, that's one way. That is one way to do it, rather than having to put their name, that you have some type of checkbox indicator. But again, that just means that you just have to take, when you download this data, you're going to have to probably have two copies of it and separate out the contact information from the other responses, so that when you're analyzing it, the data is truly blind. But that if you want to go back to it, then you can trace it back to an individual.
My concern about a checkbox, though, is I've heard many cases where the only students that are willing, like, they tend to be a certain type of student because it's essentially a volunteer sample, right? Whereas I think if we could maybe target specific people and offer them an incentive, we might get a different crowd than we would just through pure volunteer. Because I've heard a lot of times in cases like this, the only ones that are willing to come in and talk about their answers further tend to be, you know, like the A students anyway, the ones who are kind of pretty confident that they've got it.
Right.
They're willing to come in. Whereas, you know, here, I don't know if we're necessarily going to, like, here I'm not interested in levels of understanding like I would be in assigning a grade. I'm interested in seeing their thought process. But I wonder if we'll get enough variety and people agreeing to do an interview that will give us a wide variety of interesting thought processes when we go back and look at their answers. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how to keep it anonymous at the same time, because then we'd have to know who everybody was if we're going to target certain individuals.
Well, we would at some point, but I wonder if there is some way we could separate it. So we ask everybody to tell us what their code is, their linking code. So they have to enter that in at some point. So somewhere, someone does have identifying information on the student and knows the codes. What we see on the day-to-day basis, though, is just the code. We can link the opinion survey with the research questions. Then from our responses and the research questions, we can pick the answers we want to target, send an entire list to that third party saying, you need to find these codes for us. They send us an entire list back, not matched one-to-one, though. So we only know that you gave one of these answers that are in this group, but we don't know which answer was yours specifically. So let's say we have, let's just say we were to do this with 10 people entirely. Someone, we ask some colleague of one of ours, we ask to keep the list of the 10 names and the 10 ID numbers. But all we see when we're looking at their answers is the ID numbers. we pick out the three answers that we think are the most interesting, say these are the three students we want to talk to, and we email our contact. Let's just say it's even my colleague, Roger. So I'll email Roger and say, I need you to contact these three people. And I'll just give him the IDs, and he'll just give me a name, three names back. But I won't know which name goes specifically with which ID or specifically with which answer. Then we can call those people in for an interview. So there's still some separation between us and the names. And there's always the assurance of confidentiality rather than anonymity.
I think the method that you've described would work, except that I imagine then that there has to be some way that the students have to tell you their code, and they have to tell you their name and their code.
Yeah.
So if they have to do that, then why not on the survey, they just have to put their names on it, and then the surveys get submitted. But then in the processing of the surveys, before they're analyzed, the names are removed and replaced with student A, B, C, whatever. And then the matched list is kept separate.
So we assign codes rather than having them pick codes.
That's right. The codes are assigned. And I mean, so this happens in my research all the time, because students are completing work as part of class assignments or whatever, so their names are on it. But then I assign everybody a code, and I strip all the data, and I keep my list of my codes matching the individual names completely separate from all the data, so that there's not this matching. And then if there's a reason to contact somebody, then I can go back to that list. And I think it's a good idea to actually either have like a RAB member or have one of your colleagues keep that list separate. The biggest issue is that, when you're doing it through, say, SurveyMonkey, the raw data is always still back in SurveyMonkey, unless you delete it. And so I think that's the point where you have to decide that you're not going to use SurveyMonkey as a backup, and that once you download the data off of SurveyMonkey, you get rid of it, because in SurveyMonkey, the names would be attached. So I think you can do it that way, or you can do it the way that Herla described. I mean, either way, there are several steps involved in creating that extra name to code list.
Well, at least if we had their names, they won't forget what their ID number is.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Yeah.
But there's also benefits of them putting in a code and them not feeling like immediately you know who they are.
Yeah,
that's my only concern, because, I mean, I'm doing this with my own students, and I just don't want, that issue to be a problem, them feeling like they can't, any
well,
pressure.
Well, if you're going to have this be voluntary anyway, it seems to me that usually the people that aren't going to participate because they're afraid of confidentiality issues anyway, even if you're telling them there's nothing that's going to, cause it.
Right.
So I don't really know what the difference is of the people thinking that we're going to be able to link them versus knowing we're going to be able to link them, if that's going to make much of a difference. I think students always feel like they can't trust the internet, and you can really find out who I am.
Probably true. It's funny, now that we're talking all through this, I'm realizing that I've had a mismatch in my own head of how I've been thinking about implementing this, because my students, part of me has always imagined doing paper copies with students in class. And I guess they could write a code on top of the paper as easily as they could write their name. But since it's more of a class activity, I would just imagine it more a worksheet with a name on top, and they pass that back in. And so maybe we all need to give this a little bit more thought about how we can imagine this really working in our own classrooms. the actual nitty-gritty of this is what I'm going to do, and then we need to think about that in terms of the IRB, and maybe we just need to switch our focus from anonymity to confidentiality, which may make it a little harder to get the IRB, but that may be, quite frankly, just what we need to do.
Right.
And I still think we can get, I don't think it'll be impossible to get IRB that way.
As a strange question, is there ever generally an issue with using other professors' students?
No. Not if you have good relationships with them.
Well, then I was just thinking, you know, if we're worried about, you know, our students knowing that we know who they are, it's like if we use someone else's class, we have no idea who those students are anyway.
So we should just analyze the data on someone else's class?
Well, I mean, if they're teaching the exact same class, it kind of seems like if we're not actually doing, you know, implementing any changes in how things are taught yet, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's two other, I mean, in my school, there's two other professors that are teaching this class, and I know them both really well, so I don't think it'd be a big deal. It's just, you know, easier for me to just do it in my own class than to set it up with another class. Not that much harder, but I'm being
I still think you would need to get the students' permission, though, so I'm not sure that really solves those issues, because the idea is that something they wrote, their opinions, are going out somewhere, and you need their permission for that. So whether they're going to you or going to a third party who they don't know, they're still going. So I think you would still have the same IRB concern.
Yeah, I knew we were with that, but I don't know if we have a better chance of getting more student responses if it wasn't our own students.
That I'm not sure about.
So what it sounds like you guys need to do is to basically you need to write up your methodology. You need to write your methods chapter.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So that gives us, by my count, that gives us two things we need to think about before the next call. One is the goal of the lit review, and then what we need to accomplish that goal. And two is our methods for collecting our data. And we need to each give those some individual thought to be prepared for the conference call next time, when hopefully we can come to some consensus on them.
Yeah.
Is that what everybody else took away from that conversation?
And I think I might also try maybe emailing my IRB contact, be like, here's what we're thinking of doing. Do I need to submit a modification or a new one, just so I kind of get it know right away?
That sounds like a good idea. I can probably do the same thing.
Yeah.
That way, unless I was trying to submit a modification, then 2 weeks later we find out that that's not what they wanted and delaying it even more.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, and even if we can get an idea, I mean, with the whole confidentiality thing, if that's going to be a huge issue, I don't know. My guy seemed a little persnickety about things last year, so I don't know.
Yeah.
And both the two IRBs I've put through have had totally different responses. I mean, this one that we did for ours, you know, they wanted a lot more information from me. Versus I did one for my own students in class that I had to have their names at the top of the paper and everything, and that one was exempt. I'm like, okay, this other one, I don't know who they are, and I need more work for them.
Yeah.
It just seems kind of weird.
All right, so that's a good idea. As part of thinking about our message chapter, we should probably do an initial contact with our IRB. Shall we try and set a time for a call, or come up with maybe one or two times and then let Tara and Felicity vote on what works for them? Because we're down to our last 20 or so minutes here.
I say we try to narrow it down to two times in the same week if we can.
Okay.
The question is, how long do we want to wait? Like, do we want to already look the week of Labor Day? Or do we want to wait till the following?
Well, the week of Labor Day is about 2 weeks from now, right? Or how?
3 weeks. The week of September 6th.
Sure.
Well, this time on Wednesdays works well for me.
Hold on. I gotta look at my class schedule. Hold on. I think I have a class. Faculty menu. What is my schedule again? Probably something I should know.
Yeah.
I have a very nice schedule. I teach from 8 to noon on Tuesday, Thursday.
Nice.
Yay!
Schedule. Yeah, no, I...
all open.
Yeah, no, if you'd like me to be there, I have a statistics class, actually, at 2 o'clock Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So that would unfortunately not work for me. I could do 3 o'clock. I don't know if that works for everyone.
Any naysayers?
Hang on. I think I have office hours from 3 to 4 on Wednesday. I need to find a syllabus. I actually teach Wednesday nights, but I think I set. No, 4 to 5. So I could do 3 to 4. No one ever comes to my office hours anyway, but it would probably be rude to put a sign up that I'm on a conference call and don't knock on my door if they were expecting office hours.
Sorry.
So, I'm sorry, you have a call 2 to 3? Or, I'm not a call, a class, Lee, 2 to 3?
Yeah, 2 to 250. So.
Okay, 2 to 250. So you think you could make it back and be ready for a call by 3?
Yeah, maybe. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm wondering, our department meeting is usually like 3:30 on Wednesdays, so they haven't set it yet, but that's what it was last year. So I'm trying to remember when our... go ahead and set it, but I may have to email you. We're setting 2 times, right?
Yeah. And we can also, I'm thinking like a Tuesday or a Thursday afternoon could work too. Probably Tuesday would be better for me. Because, Jackie, you said your classes go till noon, right?
Yeah, but I do usually have, I have office hours till 1:30
okay.
after that. Would Tuesdays at 2 work for people?
I think Tuesday at 2 would work for me. We could run, we would have to be careful about webinars. We'd have to make sure
yeah.
we're on off webinar week, but that should be easy enough.
Yeah.
What about a morning time?
I'm not on a Tuesday or Thursday because Jackie's teaching.
Right, so it would have to be a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday morning time.
I'm good anytime from 9 to 1. God, I'm good anytime from 9 to 1. I have a big break there.
That week, Wednesday or Friday, I'm fine in the mornings until about 11.
How about 10? Just throw it out there.
Yeah, that should work for me.
So it sounds like you've got 3 possible times.
What day are we talking about here? Monday?
Monday's Labor Day.
Yeah,
or if we were to do it like the next week, would a Monday at like 10 work?
Actually, I just realized it doesn't for me. I'm sorry, we have a seminar. How about Wednesdays?
Only problem for me Wednesday is I work from home in the morning and then drive in at 11, so we'd have to be done at 11 every time. I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but...
How about Fridays?
Fridays would work.
Friday works probably better for me.
Okay, so Friday 10 to 11. Tuesday 2 to 3, was that one of the times we talked about?
Yeah.
As long as it's an off webinar week.
Right, as long as it's an off webinar week. And Lee, can we count on you to let us know the schedule?
Yeah, the 7th, for September, the 7th and the 21st are good dates.
Non-webinar days, you mean?
Non-webinar days, yes.
Okay. All right, so that's 2 times. And did we have specific dates with these, like Friday the 10th, Friday the 17th?
Well, Somebody suggested Labor Day week, so I think
that would be Friday the 10th.
Yeah.
9-10, and then you said the 7th would work for Tuesday.
Yeah. Not the 14th, though.
Right. Right. What about the 17th, that following Friday? Does that work for people, too, if we were to just go 1 week longer?
Yep.
Yep.
Right. I think we have three dates two times, unless I'm missing something, which is entirely possible, that we could send out and try and see what works best for people. And then who's the organizer for this next call? I guess would Tara.
It will be Tara. She's going to have me send her the recording, too.
Okay, so then Jackie, you would be moderator. Lee.
Will be a recorder.
Recorder. And I will be synthesizer. All right, sweet. Who wants to type out the email, type up the email and send this out to the group about our two tasks? Possible times for calls and roles.
I can gladly do that since I've been off the last few months.
Off gallivanting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been having, you know, so much fun.
Doing nothing productive whatsoever.
Right.
In reality, I felt like it was nothing productive. But...
All right, I think that sounds good.
All right.
Anyone have any last questions or comments before we break?
I'm
good. I don't
think
so.
All right. Sweet.
All right.
Good luck to everyone with the rest of your summer, whatever's left with it.
I get
to start teaching tonight.
Have fun. Hey,
thank you. All right.
See you guys later.
Bye. All right, talk to you later.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.